take a ball or something and you toss it onto a carpet, it might make a depression, but it would bounce away. And so the depression is short-lived and the carpet tends to restore itself. Oftentimes, it might be like a piece of lead. You toss it out there. Have any of you ever tried to play shot put when you were in high school? And have you done it lately, Pastor? No, not lately. I've noticed that when you do the shot put type of thing, you'll toss it out there, and if it's like me, it just barely gets off the hand and goes plump right there on the surface, and it doesn't even bounce; it just stays there. That's how I would do shot put in my days today, and I didn't do it much better when I was younger. I was a lot lighter weight, and the shot put was almost bigger and heavier than I was in those days. Now, sometimes it could bounce away, and sometimes it could just stay there and makes kind of an indentation. And this tends to be the way one of those two things, or something in between, is how depression is there. And it may be that we are under a great weight right now, and so in that sense, especially if it's an emotional or intellectual type situation, we might be in a state of being poor. And so when we're looking at the scriptures, probably about a third of all of the words that are used in the word poor, taking Strong's numbers and looking through the Bible, you'll find that probably about a third of the words have to do with the idea of depression. Then you have another half of those that are left or more that might have to do with the idea of being destitute or something. There's another word at least that takes on the concept of something that's kind of in between, but usually it's a situation that most people don't like to be in. Now, I find it as I've read through the Bible. Now, eventually I'm going to end up in Psalm chapter 10, so I am going to take you to actual scriptures to work from, but that'll be maybe a couple minutes away before we get there. One of the passages of scripture that I think it's out of Exodus that is rather commonly known, the poor will be with you how long?
Always.
Now, this was Israel having in the process of moving to the land, and as they were preparing to set up the land of Israel, this is a concept that Israel was to know and to understand, that the poor would be with them always. There would be some people who would be poor, either destitute or mentally challenged because of some outside pressure that would be in that status of being poor. In fact, even David speaks of himself as being poor and wretched in one of the Psalms. And you would think of David as, huh, he's poor? Yeah, he was poor. In fact, on certain occasions, he was really faced by a considerable pressure, considering that King Saul was chasing him with his armies up and down around the countryside, up over the mountains and through the woods and in the caves and everywhere else. He was chasing David, and David considered that himself to be poor in this sense, that he was under a great pressure because he had a king who was trying to kill him and was making some serious effort of tracking him down and trying to destroy him. And so in that sense, he was poor and was of great concern to him. Now, when we look at the people of Israel, the poor you will have with you always, to a considerable degree, we would find that as we look through the Old Testament and find scriptures here and there and going on, that it had to do a lot of times with the ability to pay your bills, ability, and in the sense that we kind of move more to the destitute situation, but also it's a frame of mind that would be involved in an individual, that that they would be in a situation that would be tough. And one of the things I find is that while Israel had some commandments relating to all of the other people in Israel and how they would treat the poor, for the most part, the actual action of caring for the poor was carried out on an individual basis, such as you would deal with a neighbor, you would deal with a relative, or you would deal with someone in their great need. The kinsman redeemer concept has with it how we would operate in relationship to those who are poor. And in this case, when we're talking about the word kinsman, it's truly a relative that's involved here. The whole book of Ruth deals with this in a couple of different situations. One, with the redeeming the land, and also taking Ruth, getting it backwards now. Ruth was one who was the daughter of Naomi, right? Okay. Ruth, taking Ruth. Pardon me? Daughter-in-law. The daughter-in-law of Naomi. In this case, Naomi had, or Ruth had a husband who was Naomi's son, and he died, and she went back. Ruth went back with Naomi into the land, and that the kinsman redeemer then took her and through her provided children to the family of Naomi. And so here's a situation where we had one who was poor, both destitute in land, but also poor in family and children, and having a heritage as a possibility. And so we also know that then through the provision of this kinsman redeemer, that Ruth was taken care of. Now, this is not something that can be done based upon a city helping someone. It had to be done based upon family taking care of. This was one of the requirements that came through the law, actually, that was given. Another area that had to do with would be, let's say that I have come to a place where I can, my lands, for some reason, maybe I've come into a situation where the crops don't come in, and I can't pay my bills, things have worked hard against me, maybe I had hail one year and a rainstorm another year and just washed things out, and it came to the place where I wasn't able to pay for what I needed to, and I would lose my land. In this, there's a couple of things that take place. One is that every 7 years, the land is to go into a rest. And there was some provision in the scriptures whereby if I couldn't pay my bills, I might sell myself to a neighbor or sell myself to a relative, such that they would then take charge of things, cover my expenses for that period of time, and then as would come in at the end of the 7 years, or at the end of the 49th year, which would be begin the year of Jubilee, there would be a returning of the land to the original owner of the land. And by the way, if it came to the year of Jubilee in particular, they not only would return the land to me, but if I was in a place of servitude, they would also return to me some of the profits that would be related to the land, that the one who took charge over it would return to me sheep and goats and enough grain to plant for the next year and various things such as this. And so while I might be poor in that sense over a period of time, then the individuals who took responsibility regarding me and my family and the land, they would then return me back into a status whereby I could then begin operating as an independent operator, separate from any obligations. So this was a beneficial thing that would be there. If I was to actually be in slavery itself, they were not to treat me as the same way, especially if my family were to take charge over me. They were not to treat me in the same way as they would someone who would be a bond slave from, say, another country or something like that. Israel was to treat those who were the children of Israel with graciousness and kindness, and weren't to crack the whip on them and require them the same degree of seriousness that would be otherwise there. So these are things that are involved in the idea of care for the poor. Now, even those who were strangers, if they were poor, they were also Now, when we're talking about strangers, these would be people who were not citizens of the land. They came from maybe Egypt, or they came from Syria or Lebanon or whatever else they would come. And if they were to come into a situation of bondage, they were not to be ill-treated either, even though they might be poor and couldn't handle things on their own. Now, you also have to keep in mind that when we're talking about the poor, there are other passages of Scripture. He that will not work will not what? Will not eat. So there's a responsibility of the individual. If you're poor, you ought not to be poor because you're lazy or slothful in your conduct and your business. So there is the idea of individual responsibility. Whether you're poor or not, slothfulness is not to be tolerated in the sense that we need to be a people who make a real effort to work. Maybe we're not bright enough, or we have some lack of skills in certain areas, but nevertheless, there needs to be real effort. So that means that if I were to end up in a situation where I lost all my goods and all my lands, and you took charge over me, if I were to say, "Oh, this is kind of nice. I'm going to kick back and put my feet up on the fence and pet my goat and let you do all the work, and I'll come in when the dinner bell rings." My hunch is that in that situation, Israel is going to say to the individual, "Oh, if you're hungry, you're going to go out in the field and work. You're going to make some effort at this. If you want me to feed you, then you've got to put some work into this. If you're going to be slothful, if you're going to waste all that's there and not make no effort of being responsible, bye. Go on your way. Go let somebody else take care of you, but I don't have no responsibility over you." And so these are things that are involved here. The poor will be with you how long? So if the poor were with us always, the poor, by the way, are a people who either are economically or mentally pressed down in some way or some manner. And so, you could be a rich man and still be poor. You could be economically a poor man and yet not seem to be affected by it to some degree and be able to appear to be prosperous in the things that go on. One of the things that happens is that I was reading in one of my magazines or newspaper somewhere, maybe it was on the internet. Did you know that you can go to California and go into the desert outside of Los Angeles a ways, maybe an hour and a half or so, and there's an old military base there, and they have concrete slabs that are there, but all the buildings are gone, and that you can go and take your RV and go and park there for free, and that it's about 5 miles from town, and of course there's no electricity, there's no water, there's no sanitation, it's a desert, okay? And you can go and park your RV there for free. And there's a whole village of people who are doing this now every winter in particular, but some people stay year round. It costs a lot of people are finding that they can live there for between $1,000 and $1,500 a year. You don't like the taxes you're paying? Why spend the money on the RV and on a cheap pickup and drive it out to California? You can live out there in the middle of the desert along with all the lizards and the scorpions and as long as you have enough money to go into town and buy some water and pick up your mail once a month or however often you want to do it, you can live there quite inexpensively, and you can kick up your feet on a cactus and live there without much effort at all. Now, those kind of people are poor. Some people are quite rich and go out and do that just because they like the lifestyle. I'm afraid it doesn't rattle my cage too much, but that's something that's available. But one of the things that happens in that place is that there are some people who are bigger than other people. Remember, we talked about the bully when we were gathered here together on another occasion. And so there are people who go out there and they decide that we only live on $1,500 a month, but you know, in order to do that, some people still like a little bit of lights or radio or something, so they have a solar panel up there on their awning or whatever, and people will go and rob and steal those kind of things, or they'll pressure those who haven't got too much money to maybe give them a little bit of their food that they've got and share it with me because, you know, I'm the cheese of the town. I'm the big man. There's people who would go into a place like this and maybe make a complaint in the nearby town that you did wrong by me, and they go before a judge and they haul you before the judge. But the guy that does the complaint, you know, he makes $10,000 a year and is just spending a little bit. And you only make, maybe you only make $1,000 or $1,500 on your welfare check or whatever you're going to do. And so they'll haul you before the judge and they'll say, he's bad. Make him pay up or throw him in jail for 6 weeks or whatever. And those kind of people, the scriptures have some words to speak against. And that's where we come to Psalm 10. Why standest thou afar off, O Lord? Why hidest thou thyself in times of trouble? And so here we have the psalmist is concerned about these things. Now what he's going to describe in verse 2 and also verse 3 and verse 4 is that there are people who are called the wicked. These are just bad people. These are people who are concerned with oppressing others. They're going to take what isn't theirs. They're going to do some things that are rather unsavory that you would not expect that we would do to each other here in this congregation. I have a hunch there would be some pressure, another kind to make such a person as wicked think himself poor. The wicked in his pride doth prosecute or persecute the poor. Now, pride has to do with the idea that I'm something and you're not. That's the idea of pride. And it always focuses on me first and not you. And so, the wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. And when we're talking about persecute, the idea of persecute actually carries the idea of flame here, like a burning fire. This is where they really are trying to do something that is particularly injurious and will cause trouble in the life of the one that they're working on. The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined, the psalmist is saying. So the wicked is going to go out, he's going to say, ha, I'm smarter than that one. I'm going to go out and do something that's going to be of concern and I don't care if it injures them or not. That's, you know, I'm more important. And so he's going to do something that's going to be there, whether he lays a snare or whatever it might be with relationship to that person. The psalmist says concerning the wicked, let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined. And so he's asking the Lord, he realizes in this is that I don't have the right to say turnabout is fair play. That's a principle of Scripture that we need to keep in mind as we're doing this. Because someone does something mean and nasty to me, doesn't mean that I can take that same thing and turn it around and focus it back on him. No, what he's saying is, Lord, see what's happening. Turn the tables on him, Lord. You do it. Now, is vengeance mine? Do I have the right to repay? See, this is the concept that's involved here. And so I don't have the right to take and turn the same thing around and apply it to somebody else. But the Lord, he can rightfully do that. He's judge. He can turn back a wicked operations on an individual. And if you think about it, you've seen this happen. You know, people who they think they're so smart and they're going after somebody. And when it happens, all of a sudden the tables turn around and they end up getting sucked into the same kind of thing that they are trying to do to someone else. Verse 3, for the wicked boasteth of his heart's desire. Now, boasting is kind of like taking a bullhorn and saying, hey, everybody, this is what I want and this is what I'm going to take. Now, you've seen this going on in lots of days and days recently. The wicked boasteth of his heart's desire. He's going to be the bestest, the greatest, and all of this. And he boasteth of his heart's desire and blesses the covetous. Oh, so if you have something that I want, I'm going to boast of maybe taking it. But let's say you want something that your neighbor has. And I'm going to bless you in that concept of behavior. Go ahead and do it. And probably the wicked is going to say, because he's boasting, you take it from him, and before it's all done, I'm going to take it from you, and it'll all be mine. And so this is the kind of thing that could be possible here as we look at this. But notice whom the Lord abhorreth. What's the Lord's opinion on someone who has this covetous opinion and is boasting his heart's desire? The Lord abhors it. Now we come to verse 4. The wicked, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. Boy, do we see that going on in society today. He is, he shines himself as being superior to everybody else. It's kind of like the idea, nose up in the air. You've seen that. And they're showing personal pride in this. I'm the top of the ladder. I'm the man that's there. One of the things that's characteristic of those who do this is that they seek not after God. So, now, you want to evaluate someone who's wicked. Is someone wicked? How is this individual in their conduct and the way they do things? Are they seeking after God? Now, if they aren't and they show pride of countenance, you could be pretty sure this one would label himself as being one who would fall into the realm of the wicked. Notice when they seek not after God, God is not in his thoughts. Did I read that right? God, notice there at the last part of verse 4, God is not in his thoughts. Now see, we have people who will have God in his thoughts on occasion, but we're talking about God in all his thoughts. And so if God is not in all of an individual's thoughts, then the possibility is that such an individual is defining himself as being part of the wicked. And usually if God is not in all of his thoughts, then there's going to be pride in his countenance, he's going to be boasting in his heart, and he's going to bless the covetous, and he's also going to be involved in persecution. Maybe not of everybody, but just he's picking out one here and one there. And by the way, the one who has the weight on his life is the easy pickings. Think about this now. So, his ways are always grievous in verse 5. Now, if the thoughts of God aren't controlling everything that you do, it's going to end up being that all of your ways are grievous. Thy judgments are far above out of his sights. As for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. So, basically, his ways are grievous, thy judgments are far above out of his sight. I'm presuming that's God's sight that's there. And as for all his enemies, he puffeth at them. Now, how often have you heard this? You're in my way, fella. Get out of the way! Puff. He didn't have to do anything. He just shout. He didn't have to do anything in particular. He just has to put the airs on. And of course, if the airs don't work, then the one in verse 2 goes down into play where you actually persecute. So, you know, they carry the big stick, but they also swing the big stick if they have to. And so this is all part of the characteristic of the wicked. He hath said in his heart, verse 6, I shall not be moved. Oh, that's interesting. You see, if you do little things that characterize your walk as a wicked, you're going to find maybe some little successes here, a little success there, and pretty soon it comes along and things seem to steamroll along, and then you come to the situation where he says in his heart, I shall not be moved. I'm top dog. I'm going to be in charge of all of this that's going on. And for I shall never be in adversity. The tough things aren't going to happen to him. Adversity might happen to you, but then I'll help it along. But I will never be in adversity. I shall not be moved. His mouth is full, and here's another characteristic. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. He's going to speak things to you that would be of such a nature that he hopes you burn, or you hope that you go broke, or you hope that things are of such a nature. This is a placing of a attitude and a speech that would be against someone, that would be against their well-being, cursing. Deceit is he would speak things that would turn away from truth. And fraud has to do with the idea, I'll sell you a piece of land in Florida. And it's in southern Florida, very, very nice. You happen to have alligators living there because it's 3 feet underwater, but it's a nice place. Defraud. Take away that which is rightfully yours under false pretenses. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. This is a characteristic and a pattern of life that we see here building as we look along here. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages. Uh-huh. Where is it that people are likely to get caught? You lurk along in situations where maybe people are straying a little bit from where they ought to be, or maybe, you know, like you see stuff in the newspaper where the guy from the alley said, psst, let me sell you a watch. This is really good stuff. Sitteth in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privately set against whom? Notice the focus. The poor are the ones that can't defend themselves as easily as the others. And so he focuses on the poor. He lieth in wait secretly as a lion in the den. He lieth in wait to catch whom? The poor. He doth catch the poor. Now, in this case, there's two kinds of poor in this verse that's involved here. One has to do with one who is mentally or situationally depressed, and the other has to do with the destitute. And so, he lieth in wait to catch the poor. He doth catch the poor when he draweth him into his net. And so, all he has to do is lay out a situation, and when someone walks into it, unknowing, unawares, perhaps partly untrained, uneducated, whatever, he starts drawing the net in, drawing it in, and catching them. He croucheth and humbleth himself that the poor may fall by his strong ones. And so I would suggest this is using other people as gimmicks or people who would draw one into a situation. He hath said in his heart, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face, he will never see. Arise, O Lord, O God, lift up thine hand, forget not the humble. Wherefore doth the wicked contemn God? He hath said in his heart, thou wilt not require it. That is, you're not going to come back on me. Thou hast seen it, for thou beholdest mischief and spite to requite it with thy hand. And the poor committeth himself unto thee. Thou art the helper of the fatherless. Break thou the arm of the wicked and the evil man. Seek out his wickedness till thou find none. The king, the Lord is king forever and ever. The heathen are perished out of the land. Lord, thou hast heard the desire of the humble. Thou wilt prepare their heart. Thou wilt cause thine ear to hear, to judge the fatherless and oppress the man of the earth, that the man of the earth may no more oppress.